You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
She's the author of three books, not about the subject that we're having her on to discuss. She's a podcaster, not about the subject necessarily that we're having her on to discuss. But she is a writer for The Atlantic, and she has written something about Bill Maher. And I want to know what is happening with Bill Maher. Molly Jong Fast with us. Thank you for making the time, because I found his career fascinating. I have always liked his material and wondered why he goes so stridently toward unlikable while delivering the material, obnoxious as part of a comedian who needs to have a shtick. And now, as he's aged, it feels like he's just shouting at young people. So, Molly, your take here, what possessed you? Thank you for joining us. But what made you want to write about Bill Maher?
So I just want to plug my newsletter, Wait What?, which is part of The Atlantic, which is where I wrote this piece about Bill Maher, in full podcast plugging disclosure. And you can subscribe to it on The Atlantic. So, you know, I had been very conflicted about writing about Bill Maher because I had been on Politically Incorrect in the 90s a couple times. He had been a great champion of my mother, feminist, and he had had her on his show numerous times, and he had, up until pretty recently, been one of the few kind of news shows that would have kind of a little bit out of the mainstream feminists on, which was a great thing because a lot of these women were writing about very important stuff and then really couldn't get like popular media attention. So it was a huge service that he was doing. And it was very interesting. And, you know, he'd bring these women into network television and then cable television. So that, I think, was great. I think what happened, and I think this happens not to everyone, but it happens, is that, you know, two things. One is he's a comedian. And so he's been doing comedy for a long time. Political comedy is hard because, especially in a time of Trump when things are so outlandish. I mean, Mark Meadows burned papers in his office. Like, that should be a political joke, not like what actually happened. So when things become so outlandish, it's very hard to make comedy about them. And then I think, as a white male comedian who, you know, I think he was very worried about getting canceled. And so that took over a lot. That anxiety kind of eclipsed a lot of his other interests, right? Because that, you know, as a comedian, as a white man, this just, and that was the way he'd made his money. I think that became a source of enormous anxiety for him. And you'll see, I mean, so I started watching the show again over the last couple of years. And I was struck by, and what's important about him, again, is that he actually does have a very large platform, even if you're not necessarily looking at just the rating numbers. And he's also thought of as a liberal. So the fact that he's thought of as a liberal gives his, I want to say, more discriminatory thoughts, more credence in the zeitgeist, and that is very problematic.
Have we changed, or has he? Because he maintains that he's the same person and that the extremes have moved where the lines are.
Elon Musk also says that all the time. The reason why I wrote the piece was because I watched him give this monologue about trans kids that was so destructive and so expansive and so uneducated. And in fact, I went to someone who writes a lot about trans issues, and I said, you know, is this true, this thing he said about, you know, the age that they give puberty blockers to? And it wasn't. I mean, there were just a lot of things in that monologue that were right-wing talking points. And that was the moment when I thought, I just have to write about this, because I felt that it was a real demarcation line. Now, that said, Bill Maher has been problematic for a long, long time. And one of the ways he's been problematic is he has spread terrible anti-Muslim rhetoric since 9/11, probably before. And in a way that is shocking. And as for me as a Jew, you know, I feel like any kind of racism is ultimately what we have to stand up against that. And so when I've heard him say, and I've heard him for years and years and years say things that were shockingly racist, anti-Muslim, and I mean, just shocking. So I had never written about that because other people had written about it, and I felt that it wasn't, you know, my place. And since I had had this connection with him, I felt very uncomfortable writing about it. But when I saw that he was also targeting trans children in this way, I felt I had to say something.
He has also used the N-word on his show. And for those of you who do not know the history, when she speaks of anti-Muslim rhetoric, his show, called Politically Incorrect, was canceled off of ABC because he was discussing the semantics of whether flying airplanes into buildings on 9/11 was an act of cowardice or not. He said it was many things. He said it was not cowardly to give your life for a cause, and he lost his show over it. I don't know how this has scarred him, but his behavior now suggests to me that he's trying to go viral every week, that he's trying to keep his relevancy as young people discredit what's been a really impressive career by saying, who the hell is Bill Maher anyway? Well, he's had a TV show that has been on the edge of comedy for 20 years. You can't dismiss his resume.
1993. I mean, the guy is very famous, and that is what, I mean, you don't need to write about him if he wasn't so famous. I wouldn't have. And I also think, like, you know, this is a very, very dangerous time for LGBTQ kids. They are being targeted by members of the, I mean, look at Governor Abbott. I mean, this is a very tough time. And so in my mind, there's a moral imperative here to protect these children. And so I felt that to watch this was just beyond the pale, and that I had to say something. And I also think, you know, he has this huge platform and he has an opportunity to do good, and he's not. And so I was, you know, and I took a lot of abuse for that piece. I mean, people do not like it, but I'm going to just say one last thing, which is this thing, like, I haven't changed, the left has. I don't think that these two things would ever be considered liberal, right? Bullying LGBTQ kids, being anti-Muslim, saying the N-word. None of those things are liberal tropes. They never were, they never will be. So I'm not sure how the left has moved left.
Oh, I think that his argument would be it's moved left because you've changed what the rules are on his comedy and how close he can get to the edge. And you're more sensitive now, young people, than I've ever been. I've been a leader on progressive thought, and now I'm not progressive enough anymore. I'm old, and you're threatening comedy. I think that's If I'm playing pop psychologist, I feel off of him. He's right. always been somebody who's been obnoxious and strident. It's been part of the act. But now it really does feel very often like he's shouting at clouds because he doesn't want young people to get to have the moral authority over him.
No, I think that's right. I think that's right.
And I think that's where he looks at the left as being more extreme than it's ever been, because he says, well, young people are more sensitive about comedy. I think these guys have a blind spot when it comes to the comedians. Right. They always want to get close to the edge, and they rationalize it away as, well, I'm protecting comedy. I'm protecting the ability to say things.
I don't know, but it seems as if his monologue on Real Time is not quite the same as a comedy routine. I mean, there are other conversations about comedy I think you could have, but this is, you know, he tends to have politicians and thinkers. And so he's really being a TV host, which I think is a bit different. But yeah, for sure. And I mean, I also think, you know, the guy is very rich and he's gotten older and he's been famous for a long, long time. And I just think that shifts the way you feel about the world.
Where would you put him now politically? Given what he's doing now as comedy, I don't know how he can consider himself progressive.
I mean, I think he's always had very libertarian leanings. And so he's sort of a libertarian, maybe a little bit on the, you know, look, I mean, this is the thing. He's a libertarian who likes to smoke pot and lives in L.A., you know what I mean? And has a lot of money. Like, and congratulations
and
to
is,
him.
And is older, and right. Older white people feel threatened right now, comedians right. or otherwise, no matter how rich.
Right. No question. And it's funny because if you look, I mean, it's not funny, but if you look at the sort of, you know, you have these people complaining about cancel culture, but then if you look back at the cancellations, there, you know, it's not quite as black and white, you know, as one might intimate from the way these people talk.
Why do you think, or why do you theorize, that he's afraid of being canceled? I do not see that in his behavior.
I mean, I think he, you know, all of these comedians, or a lot of them, want to, you know, that's the anxiety, right? Is that someone's going to tell them they can't say what they want to say. And, you know, the reality is nobody is telling anyone anything. It's just that, like, targeting trans kids during a time when these children are already being targeted by numerous other, you know, the law and various other outlets and conservative media, in my mind, seems like a very destructive thing.
Why has trans rights and LGBTQ youth become the issue that it seems like a lot of left-leaning people are trying to meet the culture war in the middle on right now?
I think because it's a phenomenon that's very small and that is, you know, for some of these people, a bit new. And so it isn't, but it is, right? So they've decided on the right that it's an issue they can use to create distraction and diversion. And so you see that as a way to sort of shift the conversation, right? So we have, you know, this January 6th committee, right? And there's real question of accountability for Donald Trump. And this is not good for Republicans. So they want to shift the conversation and they want to have the conversation. They want to move the conversation to inflation, which is maybe a real problem in America, but it's also a real problem in Europe. And fundamentally, Republicans have no solution for inflation, just like Democrats do. I mean, it's going to be the Fed and it's going to be the supply chain and it's going to be right. There's no brilliant political solution for inflation. If there was, we'd all be doing it. So I think that this issue is an issue they feel they can win on. I don't think they can ultimately, but the people who are going to end up being hurt are LGBTQ kids.
You have written a lot about the January 6th hearings most recently. You said that they could change everything if we let them. What are your, this is a broad question, obviously, but yeah, your big interesting takeaways from what you have seen here? I don't know that we've covered a whole lot of new terrain with these hearings, but your big takeaways have been what?
I think they've done a very good job. And I think that Republicans are very threatened by it. And they've set, like, the new far right talking point is that it's a TV show. It's a TV show produced by a TV producer, and ergo, it's not real. But the reality is, we live in a totally different time when people have very short attention spans and need to see little bits of proof. And there's so many conspiracy theories on the right, a few on the left, but largely on the right, that it is so important that these little bits of data get out there. And so seeing video of the Republican, the lawyer, you know, or the White House counsel saying that Trump had no case and that they knew, you know, that this was wildly debunked and that these were election lies is very useful and I think important. So again, there is a significant part of this country that believes the 2020 elections were somehow not fair. This is a terrifying state for democracy. We have seen numerous people say, in fact, that they were fair. And the more that we as a culture can absorb the message that these were free and fair elections, the better off all of us are.
Molly, thank you for being on with us and thank you for your work.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
I don't think in 2021 I can get away with my Michael Irvin radio show impression.
No, probably not.
Stugatz. Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha, ha. Kev.
That's okay. I think that's still okay. I think you can do that.
Ha, 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 ha. Kev. This is the Dan Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Represented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
We'll let you know, Dan, that I've replaced the Browns calendar in my Gmail, my Google Calendar. I used to have all the Browns games in there. Now I have all 32 teams scheduled in there.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Look at it.
Do you really?
Yeah. So I can plan.
I saw an enormous color stack in one section. Oh, my God.
Because keep in mind, like some of the teams play each other. So there's a lot of duplication here, but I'm very excited. I have my full Sunday night schedule, my Monday night. Dan, the Rob Lowe tour has circled Chiefs at Buccaneers Sunday night football. And also Packers at Bills Sunday night football. Halloween Eve, that one. I got to see the Bills Mafia in action. I'm very excited about my year as Rob Lowe.
Mm. Whittingham was very disturbed by what he saw on your screen there. Just a lot of colors. It's just a lot of...
Well, I got the Kane schedule too. Kane schedule this year is killing me. So many crazy good music festivals that I wanted to go to. And I can't because I'm just, you know, I'm a part of this society now, Dan. It's weaved in the fabric of Mike Ryan now. Me and the Golden Canes marching over to College Station. You know, that's an actual place. It's a city. I thought it was just a train station and a football field, but no, it's a city named College Station. Not much there, but I'm looking forward to learning.
If I were to try and prod your Browns fandom, if I were trying to resuscitate it as the season approaches, and my guess is the embers are going to start up for you. You're going to have some longing. It's not going to be as fun just watching football as it is rooting for a single team. When Odell Beckham writes on Twitter, to a team that showed me love and gave me their all, what I wanted in Cleveland the entire time. So miss me with all the scapegoat shit. All the Cleveland's better without me, LOL. Then I dip, and we all see how that panned out. Again, I'm in a place of love. Does that stir you at all, that the greatest Browns team of your lifetime, of Baker Mayfield and Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham, the first Browns team of your lifetime that came with expectations, the finest and most successful of Browns teams coming after one win in two seasons by being relevant, by being a national story.
By winning a playoff game at Pittsburgh.
It's all over, and Odell Beckham is saying, well, look, all it took for me to get what I wanted was to go over here, a team that I just wanted it from Cleveland. Cleveland didn't give it to me.
Yeah, he gets to be right. I get to be like emotionally scarred by that whole experience, I guess. I should point out that the best Cleveland Browns team that won that playoff game in Pittsburgh did so much of the season without Odell Beckham. He wasn't there. There was a nice little lane there for him. I don't know what went wrong there. I'm always going to love those Browns teams. I'm not going to forget the past. It's really this incarnation of the Cleveland Browns, specifically with Deshaun Watson at quarterback, that's what bothers me. I do wonder how I'm going to react to if he gets a season-long suspension and all of a sudden it's those same orange helmets and Jacoby Brissett, a non-problematic quarterback, is under center. How am I going to react to that? I don't know the answer to it. I will say that my whole outlook on this NFL season has totally changed. I wasn't into the NFL draft whatsoever. I didn't have any skin in the game. I was just saying, go team. I am very much looking forward to traveling the United States and going to some of these cathedrals of the sport and just trying to see the best of the best. Being a Browns fan, I saw a lot of bad football, talked myself into some really bad football teams, and I'm kind of excited to just see greatness play out.
That trip needs to be sponsored, and you have to be sports fan moral compass. And you have to figure out a way to get your traveling the NFL trying to find something to root for as a storyline for the season, because it's weird.
I think rooting for players is something that I think I'm kind of leaning into. I want to see Tom. If I'm purchasing a ticket to see Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady both be great, I just want to see a good football game and take in the culture of the fans. When I'm going to the Texas A&M game, the Cowboys are playing the Bengals not too far away on that Sunday. I think I'll try to go to that game. There's something to this, and gamblers and big-time fantasy players have so many conflicts of interest that they don't, like, their team actually becomes second to their own fantasy team. And I think a lot of people can kind of see how you work yourself into that. The Browns was such a part of my identity that I truly don't know how it's going to land once the games start. I do know that this offseason has been totally different, and anytime I see any Browns coverage, I just have this visceral reaction now.
It is very funny, though. It's the universe's sense of humor that what might lure back Mike Ryan to the Browns is Jacoby Brissett. That it's not going to be Baker or Deshaun Watson. It's just, hey, there's a non-problematic total stiff.
Yeah.
All right, I'll get back behind the Browns now.
I'd romanticize having Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. Are you kidding me? That's my Browns fandom in a nutshell.
One of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life.
I will tell you, like, there is a scenario here, and it might be the Jacoby Brissett one. Again, I have no idea how this plays out. But if it seems very unlikely that Baker and the Browns can mend fences, but if, say, Deshaun is suspended for an entire year, and Baker and his team realize that the best possible play here is a 1 year proven, and that's the best possible situation.
There's no way he does it, Mike.
And Baker decides to play out the string as a Cleveland Browns quarterback. That's going to be hard to turn away from.
Isn't it being reported that they're now willing to pay half his salary or close to half his salary to make him go away? He's so disrespected. I would be in a very simple human way, even though these are business transactions, dear gods. If I were Baker Mayfield, I would feel so hurt about how dirty the business did me.
Yes.
I'd be really wounded that these jobs are so precious. They're so hard to come by. There are so few people that get to do them.
I play through injury. I risk money. I risk my future. I did it for the Browns. I did it for the fans. We didn't have a good season. I didn't have a good season. And then you give this quarterback, you get rid of him and give a quarterback with a million things swirling around him the richest contract in the history of the game. I mean, of course he's hurt.
Mike, he will never go back there. He is so offended by he will make it a dirty, bitter, angry exit at the end. There will be no cooperation. He will cut off his nose to spite his face. He has been so hurt and embarrassed, disgraced. This is a person.
Some of which is doing.
Okay, but this is a person whose entire career has been based on pretty spectacular success. I mean, he got to those commercials fast, man.
Well, he got to greatness fast.
But we were trying to make him something.
He was awesome his rookie year.
We were in a hurry. Look, he got there first in line. There are old quarterbacks in this league. There needs to be a new guard. He got to this space of new position, going to play it differently. Can it be smaller? Can it be mobile? He got there first, and it chewed him up damn fast.
Mike, you say some of his own doing, but he did all the right things. Like, he did what you want your guy to do. He played through pain. He got them to the playoffs.
I feel for him. Yeah.
I know. But then he did all the right things. Like, he risked money, his future, all of it for the team, and it backfired on him.
Yeah. Well, he didn't do all the right things. He didn't play well for half his time in a Cleveland
Browns. Because he was hurt.
Uniform. Because he was hurt.
Well, not just that. He was a confusing player. He got saddled with two of the worst head coaches of all time to start. I don't want to have the Baker Mayfield conversation, but I do. Here's the Baker Mayfield conversation I do want to have. There's only one team right now that's super hot on him, and that's Carolina Panthers. And they could use him. They had no timetable for Matt Corral, as Weekend Observations earlier this week told us.
Mm-hmm.
They got Sam Darnold. I think if you look at Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield's resume, you'd say Baker Mayfield's better when
he's
healthy.
He's better. He's a better quarterback.
I agree. The Browns' week one opponent is the Carolina Panthers. Mm. Can you imagine Baker Mayfield hosting the Cleveland Browns and playing that game?
You could go to that game.
The largest chip ever on one shoulder.
You could go to that game as part of your Moral Compasses tour around the NFL
against Jacoby Brissett.
I would root. So I'm telling you right now, I'd root for the Carolina Panthers in that game in Baker, just because they decided to go down this path with Deshaun Watson. They are so deserving of that embarrassment week one. If Baker ends up starting against
you're now rooting for your team to be actively embarrassed.
I'd be rooting for Baker Mayfield to have that moment, because I think that this team needs to be punished. This team needs to be embarrassed, and they're not being punished or embarrassed right now throughout all this. They're being embarrassed some, but they obviously weighed that and decided to move forward with it. So give them an embarrassment that they got to wear. Have Baker Mayfield dancing on the sidelines, being cocky, and tell them you signed up for that. Across the sideline, that would be amazing.
It would
drama.
Have to be Baker beating Deshaun, though. I mean, he's beating Brissett.
Well, I think it still lands. Like,
he's,
you could have had
not,
me.
He's not beating anybody. What you're getting is Myles Garrett is going like those cartoon cats that would eat fish and then just put them in their mouth, and what they pulled out was just scales. Like, what are you talking about? He'd go in there and he would become part of Myles Garrett's stool.
Right, but when they got the ball back, they'd be giving it to Brissett.
Such theater, though. That goes from a game. That goes from a game.
It's ridiculous.
Week one, that the Red Zone wouldn't go to it's Brissett ridiculous. Versus Sam Darnold.
You will not make me interested in a Carolina-Cleveland game in June. You will not. Funniest thing from the sports weekend.
Baker is a quarterback for the Panthers.
You're not going to do it to
Dan,
me.
Dan, we're in June. Any football.
I'm not doing
no,
it.
No?
Nope. Funniest not, thing from the sports weekend. I will not
no
do
football,
it.
I mean, no football. No football in the world.
I'm going to resist
they're
it.
They're lighting
I'm
it up north of the border. Argos.
Might you become a Carolina fan? I mean, might you?
No.
Rob
Lowe. First stop on the Rob Lowe World Tour, though?
First stop right now might be Bengals at Cowboys. I think that's week two of the NFL season.
Would you be kind enough, Mike Ryan, because it's a pretty good impersonation and you seem crazed and you've been doing it a lot over the last couple of days, and I'm not saying it's because you're gambling. I'm not speaking of gambling, although I suspect you're probably doing that a lot as well. Can you please tell the people about Two for the Money and Al Pacino and that the best feeling in the world? You can check this out on Cinephobe. They do a good job of chronicling all the things, but Mike Ryan has now summoned a crazed Al Pacino who thought the losing was the best part and just recently discovered that that movie was all about him wanting to be cucked the entire time.
I couldn't believe that. Maybe it's because back when I saw it, I didn't know what cucking was. But Al Pacino definitely wants to watch Matthew McConaughey absolutely rail Rene Russo.
Oh my God.
That's the entire movie.
It is the entire movie.
He just
movie.
Wants to sit back in a corner and watch.
Okay, and because he wants to lose. He's a loser.
Yeah, he's a loser. He's a lemon. He never feels more alive than when they're pulling the chips away. And that's he wants the chips of life being pulled away from him.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when Brandon Lang goes on his losing streak, Al Pacino blames himself because he started gambling again, and he is just destined. He revels. He loves
self-loathing,
being a loser.
Yes.
That's why he's gambling again.
Let's do funniest thing from the sports weekend a few days late.
Hey, people. Tell us what in the sport made you laugh hardest this weekend. It is a segment we call What Made You Laugh This Weekend. Ha, ha, ha.
Funniest thing from the sports weekend is presented by CBDMD.
Tony, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Dan, one of the greatest NBA fans of all time has now been banned from his home court. Fake Klay Thompson, who is weirdly wearing a jersey to the game, which nobody in the security staff recognized him wearing a jersey, stopped him. He actually got to the court and shot like a couple shots before they realized, like, hey, this guy's a little bit bigger than Klay Thompson in the stomach region. This guy's got to go.
Wait, are we saying that you don't think he should be suspended forever?
No.
He should.
He broke onto the court. It's the security's fault.
Yeah, security's fault.
First off,
the person that trespassed.
Chris, what player shows up to the game wearing his jersey?
Look, I'm not saying that it's the security should have a talking to, but this guy should get punished.
He looks just like Klay Thompson, though.
So that gives him free reign just to do whatever he wants.
It's kind of dumb of him because, like, he's now ruined his only thing.
Yeah.
Because, like, now what does he do?
Right, it's over.
He goes to, like, the park looking like Klay Thompson.
It's a good run, though. I mean.
Yeah, but it's done.
The Warriors could embrace it more and bring him on, have him shoot pregame every game. And now, like, see who you can trick.
That's sending a horrible message. Yeah. Like, hey, just invade our arena whenever you feel like it, and then we'll sign you up to work for us.
Tony, I'm glad you brought this up because this was a failure of our coverage. We covered the hell out of the NBA Finals too much. Way too much for many of your liking.
It's the biggest sporting event in the country going on.
I know, but
coverage of the biggest sporting event in the country.
It happens when we talk too much sports. Every once in a while, people get upset, but this was a real failure because this was in our wheelhouse as a show. Our show would embrace and would love the fake Klay Thompson, the entire story. He did make it look way too easy to get into all the areas, but I saw some of that on the internet. There were the Warriors celebration. The friends and family room was filled with a whole bunch of people who snuck in there. And we're just, trying to get their TikToks up. Like, that's happening all over the globe. And you did a good thing bringing this to us because we didn't talk enough about the fake Klay Thompson. So what are the story parts I'm missing? He gets on the court. He does look a little heftier. He's thick, but he does look a lot like Klay Thompson. You can understand how the mistake could be made. You sound ridiculous, Tony, blaming that on security. He must be punished for that. That should not be allowed. That's dangerous.
He wore a jersey to the game.
Exactly. It's funny, not only in the arena, like him pulling up in a convertible, and he's just like, as if Klay would pull up with the jersey
with
on.
With his jersey
and
on.
And the people are like, hey, Klay, go on through, man.
Didn't bring my bags today. Jersey only.
Chris Cody, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Joe Biden falling off his bike.
Oh, my God, was that good. It was so good. And it could have been so bad. I've never seen someone fall off a bike that way. It was comedically perfect. Where he's right in front of your camera and then he drops as if the bottom half of his body had been taken away. just as if
just vanished.
Leader of the free world.
It didn't even make sense. Hey, Joe Biden's arriving. Hooray. Old man can ride bike. He's arrived. He has successfully docked the boat. Oh no, he's on the floor.
And the video cutting right when he falls too is hilarious.
Roy, what was the funniest thing from this? From the sports weekend.
Chris Mad Dog Russo again, angry at Delta Airlines for canceling his son's flight. Yeah.
We played this sound yesterday, but let's play it again today just because of how lovely the sound is. Mad Dog Russo is a eternal delight.
we'll get Jason in Madison, Wisconsin. And speaking of Madison, Colin Russo did not get home this weekend, so I got a burr up my fanny on Delta Airlines. Delta for the birds. You, the airline should be embarrassed. I'm getting off the deep end here, but the airline should be embarrassed that all of America couldn't fly anywhere for the last 3 or 4 days. 22% of flights canceled on Thursday, 18% of flights canceled on Friday. Hey, Delta, I don't need an apology to NBC. You know, your job is to make sure you get a plane to Madison, Wisconsin, and get my kid home for Father's Day weekend. Go ahead, Jay.
We're debating back here what a burr is, and Witty has a funny thought that it's a burst of cold air.
Like an actual, like a burr. Like burr. You describe burr.
No, no.
I don't know what a burr is. Well, I Googled burr in my fanny, and I couldn't find anything.
Okay, this is...
I don't know how to spell. Is it B-I-R, B-U-R-R?
Well, I think this is one of the reasons that I believe that Stugatz worships at the Mad Dog Russo Shrine. I'm pretty sure that what he means is a spur. A spur, like something that would be at the end of a boot. I'm pretty sure. It is not B-R-R-R, like I'm cold.
And so a spur up the fanny?
Yes. Well,
how would that get there?
Which would be
it
terrible.
Would it yeah. would be terrible. That is correct. That would be much worse.
Someone kick you with the back of their boot to get this...
Or they use it with their hand, maybe. It's not on their foot. They just jam it up there.
A burr is a prickly seed case or flower head that clings to clothing or animal fur.
Hmm.
Okay, so maybe, so it is...
Apologize to Mad Dog.
It's B-U-R-R?
Yes, it is B-U-R-R.
Do you believe that there was anyone else in America on that day that used in the English language the phrase... burr up my fanny.
You've picked burrs off of your gym socks running through tall, unkempt
grass.
Oh,
those little thick, yeah, those little thickets. That would be bad. But
the wasasa.
That wouldn't be terrible.
Yes, that is something that throughout my childhood would end up on all my socks because, and it would be prickly to get out and it would be bad to have in the ass as well. Who's got the next funniest thing from the sports weekend? Billy, you up next?
Hey, Dan. So, you know how the Major League Baseball teams have, like, all these, like, things, like, these hats for, like, Mother's Day hat, Father's Day hat, Memorial Day hat. You know that?
Yep.
All right. So, for July 4th, they have special hats. And this year, the hats have stars and stripes on them, red, white, and blue, to celebrate America. And included in those hats, the Toronto Blue Jays have their American flag hat. They're not from America, Dan. They're from Canada.
Oh!
They will be playing on the road on the 4th of July. We looked that up, so maybe that's why they have them wear those hats on the 4th. Still weird.
Whittingham, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Klay Thompson saving all of his FU to the haters for Jaren Jackson.
What was that? Did we get to the bottom of that yesterday? Is there something else about strength in numbers that is being referenced here? Is there a part of this that I'm missing that would make Klay Thompson that kind of indignant to hold on to a tweet that is just them beating Golden State? And really, it's not even a taunt. It's just saying, had Klay said something about strength in numbers? Because all it is Jackson talking about his own team. It's not even offensive.
Strength in numbers was like the Warriors' motto for 4 years. That was their thing. They would, before games, they would wear that shirt that said strength in numbers. It was probably like their hashtag for the season. And then it became such a thing because they won the title that year that strength in numbers was like their thing. So it's very obviously a jab at what is the Warriors' thing.
And the Grizzlies were coming for their thing. They were vocal about it the entire season.
Okay.
They were.
But do you see the offense in that for Klay? Do any of us understand the offense in that to holding on to it for months and then calling him a friggin' bozo? A clown? Calling him a clown and a bum, which is the strongest language I've ever heard Klay Thompson use talking about a peer.
Is this just like the equivalent of horns down? For the Texas Longhorns.
It feels like it.
Or stepping down.
Didn't Big Baby Davis say that Boston would never forgive Kyrie Irving for coming and stomping on the leprechaun? If that's not, I believe that there is no more toxic masculinity anywhere on the globe than person who defends, don't stomp on my emblem. Don't stomp on my sacred emblem. How dumb are you?
I mean, there are certain emblems you don't stomp on, right? I mean,
the leprechaun?
That's one of them.
The Celtics leprechaun.
Yes, and the star, I mean, right?
The Dallas Star?
Yeah. I mean, there are certain emblems that you just kind of leave alone. Yeah. I would say those are two of them.
College football midfield logos.
Yep.
You don't touch
those.
Yeah,
you leave them all.
Mike Ryan, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Are you familiar with the NBA Twitter account NBA Paint? This Twitter account uses Microsoft Paint to make jokes and paint players and use a lot of puns. And so they painted a photo of the 2022 Golden State Warriors. An embittered Celtics fan went at NBA Paint. Fun fact, Celtics have more banners than Draymond had points all series. Innocuous NBA Paint decided to clap back. Well, Celtics fan, Microsoft Paint didn't even exist for 16 of those titles.
Stugatz, what is the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Chase Claypool. On the I Am Athlete podcast, Dan, I don't know if you heard this, Sam, but he was badgered into this. He started out saying he was one of the top wide receivers. Brandon Marshall did a phenomenal job of getting him to top five, then into the top three, and he asked him to go further. But Chase stopped at top three. But just the fact that he called himself the top three wide receiver in the NFL, when I'm not certain he's the top three wide receiver in his own division, is pretty funny to me. Let me get Jamar Chase in there.
You do have that.
In fact, all the Bengals wide receivers.
Did you happen to see that James Worthy
Big was Game James
tweeting at Cedric Maxwell?
Cornbread.
Laughing at him as the Celtics lost with Steph Curry on the television in the background. James Worthy was holding his neck in a choking sign and was doing the sleep gesture while tagging Cedric Maxwell. Two grandpas, like they're in their 60s. Lakers Celtics was 40 years ago.
I love it.
And James Worthy is still coming after Cornbread. But I didn't think that was as funny as LeBron tweeting with urgency the easy stance of Tom Hanks defending his wife against paparazzi before game six of the finals. What used to be zero dark 30 playoff activation, nobody talked to me during the playoffs, is him giving paparazzi takes to applause. I mean, the easiest take in the world. It's getting like, older. Support Tom Hanks. Free Tom Hanks. And he's doing it. It's like, can someone pay attention to me before game six of the finals? I used to play in these once upon a time.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.